That's not fair.
No, it is fair. Okay, everybody. So today, Nathan was feeling very, very grumpy and he nearly didn't want to do the podcast because he was so grumpy. But I said family history would cheer him up. Okay, Nathan, come on.
Morning, afternoon, whatever time of day it is, that's how grumpy.
Of family history, it's honestly will cheer you up. So, well, you can tell me why you're grumpy, or you can tell me, this is a bit of a pressurizing question, did you manage to chat to your mum over the last week?
I did, yes. Not massively so, but enough that it's made my head explode. I've got lots of questions.
Yeah.
They're probably all quite basic, but I literally had to stop her. I asked her to chat to me about the family tree. And she's like, right, well, my back hurts. I need you to go and retrieve this box, which is this big metal, like, case box. So I had to go get that and pull it out. And it's massive and it's just full of documents.
Oh, my goodness.
Instantly, I was overloaded. And I'm like, right, can you just show me recent history and I'll take it from there?
Yeah.
And even that was too much. I was like, oh, my God. Because obviously, my initial thing was the silly, I just want to be a Viking.
Yeah.
And now you're making me look at my, well, inviting me to look at my family history. And so she got the book out and I'm like, okay, can you just tell me about, get me far back as great grandparents? And she's like, yeah, we can do that. So she opened this book up.
Yeah.
And this is really daft to say, but she was showing me her side of the family tree. And then it's obviously she's got my dad's side. It's like, which side should I be looking at? And I guess the sensible answer is both. But I hadn't even considered that there's different paths to go on now. And I'm like, oh my God, where do I start? Am I looking for stories or am I looking for facts? And yeah, made my head explode a bit.
Yeah. Just scroll back a bit. So I'm such a nosy person. So was your mum, was she kind of pleased that you were asking her? Was she a bit, because her back hurt, she was like not in the mood, or was it a bit of both?
No, she was happy enough. She really probably wants to talk to me about it too much. And it's just going to overload my brain at the moment. I really want to click it. Said it. And again, going back to that thing I mentioned last time we spoke, it feels like cheating. There's like this massive file. It's like some like massive government document full of everything that I ever need to know.
Yeah.
I'd like to start from scratch, literally like writing things in myself and finding all these data out.
Yeah, I think you're so right to want to do it yourself. Yeah, but you're not cheating. What you've got, so her box, I'm guessing what's in it. Maybe it might have some certificates in it that otherwise you're going to have to pay for. So she's saving you money, having it already there. And so you don't even need to, the box, you can just go, wow, this is really cool. I've got the box. But then you can start building yourself a family tree on wherever you want, Family Search or Ancestry or Find My Past or whatever. And you can just gradually add the information. Yeah?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Let's say even if you found something for your grandpa and you hadn't added in your mum's and dad's names to the family tree, it'd be pretty easy to add in your mum's and dad's name because you know your mum and dad, but for you, but some people don't know the mum and dad. But let's say you found out something about your grandpa, even if you haven't done all of your mum and dad, let's say you found a document in the trunk from your grandpa and you think it looks interesting, you can just get that document, you take a photo of it, digitise it, attach it to him on your tree, look at all the little clues, add all that information to him, write up a little paragraph, go, this is a military document and it's telling me he served these dates, and then you can write a little to-do list to yourself. So you don't need to, your tree will help you build it out methodically, even if the box looks a bit overwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it does sound quite exciting. Like, I like the idea of like going and doing it myself and finding these facts out. And as much as I keep on saying it's like cheating, but I could almost like use my mum's stuff as like the answer book. So like, oh, I found this information out. I'll just go onto my mum's tree and double check.
Dream. It's a dream. You're so lucky to have it. Honestly, oh, any person who already does their family history and you're just saying she's got this big metal box full of documents. People like me, I'm just literally like that is just wins over boxes of wine, wins over boxes of chocolates. I'm just like, I mean, even your box of papers, which aren't even mine, just lovely old papers. I'm jealous of that. Yeah, so you're so lucky, Nathan.
Okay, cool. Yeah, but, I think.
Yeah,
I'm quite excited though. Like the bit of the tree she showed me, I don't know whether she just hasn't filled in on this particular book, but it doesn't go as far back as I thought it might. So maybe I'll actually catch my mum up quite quickly and suddenly there'll be something to explore. And then equally, it's quite nice to then be able to talk to her about it and she might actually get back interested in doing it too. So it'd be quite a nice thing to do together.
It is. And also sometimes it's really handy to have someone else who is genuinely interested in your family doing it, because partly you probably will find yourself getting really excited and it's nice to be able to go, oh my God, you never guess what I found out next. And it's nice to have someone who actually wants to listen, because lots of us don't have it because we're the only family historian in the family. I'm not the only family historian in the family, so I'm okay. I've got other people I can talk to. But some people don't have anyone. And also they can help you troubleshoot stuff if you're just like going, what the heck does that word say? Or, you know, all these sort of things. So what about that Pudsey connection? Because you mentioned your family, apart from being Vikings, they had lived in Pudsey since the year dot. Yeah. Just any other places apart from Pudsey on these documents?
Do you know what? I haven't particularly looked in detail, but the recent history is very Pudsey. I mentioned, like, again, last time we spoke about, there was this hint of some Scottish ancestry. And like I said, I've got no Scottish relatives, but my mum's, is it my mum's grandma? I think it's my mum's grandma was Scottish and married to the family. So that's where the McKay came from. This is where one of my questions comes from. So I guess you follow the male bloodline usually. So my mum's grandma is Scottish. That DNA path then is obviously that's where the Scottish stuff comes from. But is that mine? Am I right to search down that path, or should I ignore that path?
No. That's fine. So it's you, then your mum, then your mum's mum, and then your mum's grandma. So that's your great granny. Yeah.
Yep.
So she's one of you've got eight great grandparents, haven't you? Two parents, four grandparents, eight great grandparents. So that great granny, your mum's mum's granny, great granny, anyway, you share very roughly 12.5% DNA with her. So if you're sticking with just being solely focused on the DNA, she is definitely worth researching. And what's interesting about a great granny, then the descendants of the great granny. So you've got the descendants of your mum is you, okay? And if you had any siblings, it would be your siblings as well, but you're an only child, aren't you?
That's correct.
Yeah. And then your first cousins are the descendants of your mum and dad's siblings. So did your mum and dad have any siblings? Yes. So if they had...
Yes, two.
Yes, so you got those are your first cousins. But then the descendants of your great-grandparents, this great-granny, she's going to have had some kids. And then they would have had some kids and they would have had some kids. And these people who have come down, follow, who can also say, hey, this is our great-granny, then you're going to share DNA with them. So on your match list, if you've got someone who is potentially roughly around a second cousin level, they're going to match with one of your great grandparents. So potentially you do a DNA test and you're going to get your results back. And people who are around the second cousin level are descendants of your great grandparents. Okay. So anyone who's on the list, which goes roughly in the second cousin area, is a descendant of one of your great grandparents, but it's one of your eight great grandparents. So it could be this great granny, or it could be one of the other seven. And that's why the DNA detective bit comes in, because you have to try and work out which branch it fits in on your family tree.
Okay, cool.
So it is cool. So she's definitely worth investigating. Yeah.
Yeah. I've just had a quick look, and my mum knows her father as well, so I can get
even
one
better
generation back from that. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just that, again, I know it's me romanticising things, but it's the thrill of having something different other than just Pudsey. Getting to Scotland sounds like quite a cool thing.
Yeah, and I think, you love outdoor things, don't you? Like, you love jogging. I think you like, do you like walking, like beautiful scenery and stuff?
Yeah, running, climbing, walking, all that stuff, yeah.
So, if potentially, you could have ancestors from a beautiful part of Scotland and you have to go and retrace where they live. Be cool, wouldn't it, though?
Force myself to have a holiday in Scotland. Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, could be really good. So you scrolling back a little bit, you said that normally people would trace like just the father line or just one line. And it's literally up to you how you want to do your family history. So some people, and it does tend to be men more because you keep your surname, don't you? So you can go, your dad was a ward and that on that direct father line, your father's 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 father. You're all going to be called wards potentially, unless there's a change of name for some reason. And unless there's kind of call it a non-paternity event, so misattributed paternity event is a better way of saying it, i.e. you think it's a ward, but at some point there might not be a ward. Something else might have happened. The DNA will reveal all. Sometimes, particularly men like doing just the father's line. Sometimes women, for a similar reason, love doing just their mother's line. Like in my family, obviously we don't have that surname connection because every generation our surname keeps changing, but my mother's line happened to be great. They're the one for all the stories.
Yeah, right, cool.
Such good oral history tellers. So is that, and for DNA and for every other reason under the sun, you want to research all of your branches. I'll be interested over the weeks and months whether you get some favourites. I'm sure you're going to get some favourite branches.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm, like I said, I'm already interested in the Scottish side. And then I've just like scanning through a few of the names. There's some interesting names appearing already. They might just be, I don't know, fun names. But like there's a guy called George Horatio Nelson.
Yeah.
That's an awesome name. Who is this guy?
Yeah. So,
yeah, it's gonna be fun.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So have you got any clues about what dates George Horatio Nelson was around?
No. His kids were born in 1928. Oh, sorry, I'm lying to you. That's a marriage. They got married in 1928. So one of his children got married in 1928. So it must be 18-somethings. I'm guessing, but I've not dug too deep. Like I said, I just asked my mum for the bare minimum and she already blew my mind with what she told me. So much to take in. So I guess I'll research that for my next time we talk.
Let's say it was 30 years a generation. Obviously it's going to vary, particularly in families where they have long runs of children. They might be having children for 10 or 15 years, but roughly 30 years a generation. So if he's got a child marrying in the, let's say 1930, that takes us back to 1900. Then let's say he was born 30 years before that. He may be roughly born, very, very roughly, 1870. So he's not going to have been named directly because Nelson would be in the press. It's not like the Battle of Trafalgar, because that's way at the start of the 1800s. But maybe there's another Nelson connection, which made it popular again. Because just like we do now, like people have crazes, you know, and there's lots of little girls like 20, 30 years ago being called Kylie or whatever, and then because...
Sure, yeah, popular culture.
Yeah, yeah. So that'd be fun to kind of find out what his connection is. It could be he's inherited that name, like maybe he had a father or a grandfather called, you know, named after Horatio Nelson, and he got it. I don't know. It's all questions, all these things we have to
find
out. Yeah.
Definitely sounds like there's a story there anyway.
Yeah, it definitely does. And he's got this... It's fun. Like, what a fun set of parents. So, you know, when you name your kids, it's, you put a lot of thought into it, don't you?
Yeah, definitely.
And you kind of, you almost feel like you're giving them talismans or, you know, things. Mm-hmm. You're equipping them with stuff. So his parents obviously had a fun view of that. About your Scottish ones, do you have any clue so far? Like, whereabouts in Scotland they might be from?
Again, nothing. It's McKay,
mm-hmm.
is the surname. And I've just looked at the most basic tree my mum could show me. So I haven't looked at any documents or anything like that. But yeah, I've no clue. I'll try. I'll put that on my list of things to do. See what sort of area of Scotland it is. Probably Pudsey, to be honest. Who knows?
And so if you're particularly interested in the Scottish ones for the moment, that's really cool. And it is a good idea to have a bit of a focus, isn't it? Otherwise, you just go round and round like a headless chicken and then you feel like you've spent hours and hours and what have I actually accomplished? So to set yourself, this is like best practice geniality, set yourself a goal and then try and stick to it. So even write it down on a bit of paper and go, I want to find out about my Scottish ancestors. So I would literally write that on a Word document or a bit of paper, and then I'd be like, how am I going to do this? And so your step one could be to go through the trunk and identify everything which has any clues that you think is to do with that great granny or with Scotland.
Yeah, that sounds good. I mean, I think I do quite like the idea of a story. I didn't think I would, but I actually do think I'm quite intrigued in like the story and the placement of people. And this one's, I guess it calls out to me a bit, again, because of obviously the Viking aspects of it, there may be some of that in Scotland. And then also, I think I mentioned before, at my nana and granddad's house, there was this coat of arms plaque on the wall with this bit of tartan. And nobody ever told me anything about it or how we had any Scottish roots. but it was there, and it was always like, oh yeah, we've got some Scottish roots. But I never questioned it or asked where it came from. So that's like a big childhood memory for me. He's always going around for Sunday tea and seeing this plaque on the wall and being like, oh yeah, we're Scottish. And it's like, oh, we're from Pudsey. But yeah, so it's going to be cool to find that out.
It is. And with anything, with any memento or whatever, I love it because it gives you clues into the people who kept that memento. So sometimes the mementos and things turn out not to be true. I'm not saying this is, but even if they don't, you get insights into what was important to them. Like, why did they bother keeping that thing? Why do they like it? Why do they display it? And it's, but anyway, I suspect you probably have got Scottish ancestors. It's cool. Yeah.
I think as a kid, I actually did, well, not too cleverly, but I didn't think I did just like, think they picked up some memento from Scotland and claimed it as their own and didn't really, again, honestly believe it was anything to do with the family line. But it might just been that they've got this name on the family tree and they thought, all right, we'll have a bit of tartan because that is the tartan for that name.
Yeah. We'll find out, won't we?
Fingers crossed, yeah. That'll be cool.
Can I get bossy about your trunk, Nathan, as well?
Go on.
So I don't know who put the stuff in the trunk, whether it is your mum's gradually gathered the stuff or whether it was somebody else. But if you're going to treat it like that's your home archive, so if you're going to treat it a bit like an archivist, sometimes the way things are put in there are going to give you clues. So sometimes things are going to be bunched together or have been put in categories, or somebody before you, they might have just slammed it in the trunk any old hole clearing out a room, but there could be some order to the material and there could be some clues in it. So I would, you're a methodical minded person, so you'll be good at this, but try and, I would probably take a photo of how it looks. And every time you take something out, you can either put a little slip of paper in and go, hey, I got this bunch of papers out from here. And so that's what you do in an archive. You've taken something out, you're going to put a marker where you got it from, so you can put it back in exactly the same place. And it could be over the weeks and months, you find out, oh, there's no order at all. Or your mum goes, oh, I just shoved it in the trunk because it was to keep it tidy. And she hasn't sorted through it. But you don't want to kind of waste that potential evidence trail by mucking it all up.
Yeah, that sounds really good.
So slips of paper to mark where you're taking stuff out from and take photos to help you get it back in the right place.
Oh yeah, that's definitely my style. I do that with
okay,
my...
Okay, nice.
My albums are alphabetized, so if I take one out to play it, I always put a little map.
Perfect. Okay.
My mum's very meticulous, so she will have come up with an order. Whether she remembers what that order is, I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll find out, I guess.
Yeah, really good. So the big bit of the conversation last time was about your DNA, so that was your other task. So many jobs to do. So did you order a DNA kit?
I have ordered a DNA kit. I ordered one straight after we finished. It was on special offer, so I got it half price, which is great. If from Ancestry, I did the basic one, which doesn't get me any subscriptions or anything.
Yep.
And I was expecting it to arrive today, so it might arrive tomorrow. They said it takes about a week to turn up, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, looking forward to that. That's raised a few questions, actually, as well. Not questions, but I obviously told my mum that I was doing it, and she was like, oh, well, I definitely know who your father is, so you don't, and all these sort of things. And I look exactly like my dad, so I know I don't have to worry about that. But yeah, just recently she's saying, I don't think there's anything weird to come out of this, but you might have a few second or third cousins that I don't even know anything about that might come through the DNA.
Yeah.
And she did start telling me a story about one of her, I don't remember now whether it is a great uncle who wasn't married, then later got married, but might have had children earlier. So... It was interesting. I hadn't even considered it, but she went straight to scandal. Did my mum just like, what's it going to reveal?
Yeah.
I guess it must come up quite a lot with all the DNA testing. So that'll be fun.
Yeah. So last night we did DNA bootcamp, and before that I was just chatting to Donna Rutherford before it went live, and she was saying that Turi King, who's another amazing genetic genealogist, she was saying that just every family has DNA scandals, and it's sometimes you come a close call, and it's like we're finding out that our own dads aren't our own dads or whatever, and sometimes we're finding out about some of our other branches who we might discover relations they didn't know they have, or vice versa. So it's just how it is being a human.
I know one of my mum's cousins did a DNA test. I don't really know much about it, and I don't really have contact with her, but she found a long lost brother from that, which is quite an interesting thing.
Yeah, and it's the situation is like it's kind of, what's the word? I don't know, like prevalent. Like, it's, don't be surprised if you have an unexpected relation pop up in your DNA test results.
Mm.
And then everybody has so many different reactions to it. Like, some people are to celebrate it and they can't wait to have a new relation. Then some people, you know, rocks their world, which is understandable. It depends how close it is really to you, doesn't it? Whether, how much of an adventure it is and how much trauma or anything like that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you don't really, I don't even, like I said, I've not really considered it, but like instantly now I'm like, oh my God, what if I have like a half brother? You know, as much as, yeah, I am my dad's son, who knows what's happened? It's, and like, you don't want to cast any aspersions on people, but who knows?
Yeah.
That's terrifying, actually.
Yeah. And also, not even my generation, but people a bit younger than me, whatever they do, probably most people know there's DNA tests around and you might have something which is a secret, but it's not necessarily going to stay a secret forever. Whereas definitely our parents' generation, there's no idea that, you know, if something was a secret, it could stay that way. Whereas DNA can just like change all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, I don't know whether that will have any impact on people's choices about whether to keep things secret or not. I don't know. We're able to tell, but looking back in decades to come, we'll find out whether it's made a difference. I think that's one of the reasons why France, one of the reasons why it doesn't like people to do DNA tests is because it's too disruptive to families. There's some classic wording online, which is basically because they're worried about it just upsetting too many apple carts.
Right. Okay. I mean, we had a meeting the other day and this came up and I'd never heard it before, but they were saying, like you just said, you can't take a DNA test in France. But then like, if I'm trying to find out that, like, you know, I said my surname's French, but I want to be a Viking. But if my DNA test comes back and tells me I'm French, how exactly do I know I'm French if you can't take a DNA test in France? Where does the French DNA come from?
Hmm. That's quite a horrible question, and I think that's probably above my pay grade. But I can try and give you a bit of an answer.
Go for it.
Ooh, okay, I'm going to try and give it in short bits, and you can see whether it makes any sense. So the first bit is when you get your DNA test results back, the bit you're going to be most excited to look at is that map to find out where in the world your ancestors have come from.
Definitely.
That is the least scientific bit. It's not really, I would say it's kind of like, it's techie because it's got algorithms, but it's not actual, oh, you're going to hate me for this, it's not actual science. It's, I would say it's tech, not science.
Right. The bit that I'm actually excited about, you're telling me, is the worst bit.
Well, it's just, it's an estimate and it changes. So when you get your match list, let's say these are two main bits when you get your test results back. There's going to be a match list with all your thousands of people who you're related to, and there's going to be your map. And your match list is science. It's literally looking at your DNA code and comparing it to other people who've also taken a test, in your instance, with Ancestry DNA. And anyone who shares segments of DNA the same as you will come up in your match list. If they share big, long segments, they're closely related to you. If they share short little segments or one little segment, they're distantly related to you. It's just science. It's based on chemicals and it's just unarguable with. That's where you get the bombshells that someone may or may not be your dad or your grandpa or whatever else. So the other bit of it, the map thing, are we okay to move on to the map thing and talk about the map?
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you going to make me cry? Are you going to make me cry?
No, I'm not going to make you cry, but I am going to get right to the end of my knowledge and we're going to have to call in an expert for a future episode. Okay. So with the map thing, when they started doing DNA tests, they thought it'd be really cool to give people information about where their ancestors had come from. And of course, we all want to know that, don't we? And so it is a good idea. And how they went about it, they asked people who had lived in an area for a long time and who had had lots of ancestors who'd lived in an area for a long time. And they said, okay, so you say you lived in, not you, well, you can use you, you've lived in Pudsey. You got ancestors who lived in Pudsey forever and ever. They'll say, right, your code is Pudsey code. And then there'll be other people who've got other ancestors who live from other parts of the world. And so then when people take a DNA test, they will look, compare their code with people in their database of people who said they have ancestors from a specific place. And they'll go, oh, well, you've got people matching in, well, not as specific as Pudsey really, but you know, Yorkshire or different areas of Scotland or Northwest Europe or whatever. So they can give you a rough geographical area. And as years have gone on, they've been able to give you more and more specific geographical area, because now they look at people's family trees. So they look through your DNA match list and they look at the trees of the people in your... only out of your DNA matches, they look at those people who have trees and they go, hey, they've all got... they all match their DNA and they've all got lots of ancestors from Yorkshire or Lancashire or Kent or wherever. And they can give you more specifics on where you live. But it's, so it's a mixture of kind of trusting what people said, where they said their ancestors had come from a long, long time, and kind and gradually kind of building on that information and verifying it by the fact of lots of people's information tallying, and then looking at people's family trees. But it's a vague, it's like trying to hold a jelly in your hands. It's kind of got vagueness to it, and it's changing as more and more people get added to the pile of jelly in the hands. It gets a more specific answer, but it's still vague. Like, it slightly does my head in. I'm going to get to the France bit in a minute. But you don't say where your ancestors came from. Well, so humans have been around for a long, long time. So at what point are we talking that you're, let's say for me, I used to be 65% Scottish. I'm only 57% Scottish now, but I've got the same ancestors on the same tree. So at what point in history were you saying I'm 57% Scottish? Is that like 50 years ago or 500 years ago? It's nonsense. It's just nonsense. That's my take on it. So, like, it's kind of fun, but it's nonsense. So back to the France bit is, my understanding is some people like you will have ward. You will have evidence, maybe even on a paper trail, that you have French ancestors. But when you get your ethnicity result back, it's going to not really tell you much about France. It might say, like, Northwest Europe. It might be a bit more vague. And it's not going to give you much of a reveal about France. Yeah? Because, as you say, they haven't got the data in there to keep building up a picture about it. Right, I need to go, help! We need help now! Yeah? I think what I said is okay. I'm happy to be called out on it, though. And
it does make sense what you're saying. It's just quite a weird concept to get your head around, to think that there's this country of origin or whatever, but the DNA is less well known. And obviously I'm talking about this from like a real beginner's point of view of DNA, but in my head that's like it. And so you're kind of saying, like, there's like almost like patient zeros that were like defined whatever stage, and then it's all expanded from that. Right?
Yeah. And because it's a kind of really funny thing, isn't it? Because so with the DNA testing, this is all consumer DNA testing. So there is the Human Genome Project, but all these commercial companies like Ancestry DNA or MyHeritage DNA, Family Tree DNA, 23andMe, that sort of one, that companies that people popularly use to do their DNA family history. These are all pretty big projects. Like, they've got people in their database into the millions. Like, Ancestry has 25 million. I think MyHeritage has about 14 million, very roughly that sort of amount. But that's consumer-funded information, consumer-funded data.
Mm.
It's still quite a small little subset of people. That 25 million is 25 million people across the globe. And it's going to be skewed. Some countries in the world really love DNA more. Like, you'll find you have matches in America because they love DNA. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool. It's weird. It's really weird to get your head around there. The more people do it, the more diluted it's going to get. Which is, if that what you were saying about your Scottish ancestry has gone down because more people...
Well, it's not really diluted. It will change. So my Scottish could have gone up, but as more and more people get added to the database, it gets fine-tuned. Mm-hmm. So it's a good thing that it gets fine-tuned because it's going to get more and more accurate. And so I have got Orkney ancestors, and in my results, it homes me in on Orkney. It'll say, yes, you've got... So that's really specific, isn't it? And my Orkney ancestors left there. My last one to be born there was in, I think, the 1840s. So it's nearly two centuries ago, but it's still able to give me that very precise little pocket about that branch of my family, which is great. So that's very precise, and that is getting very accurate. Yeah? So it's improving. It's improving all the time. Yeah?
Cool.
And getting more accurate.
throwing a question back at you. Have you been to Orkney then to visit your ancestors' trails?
Well, do you know what? I have been to Orkney, but when I went there, I didn't know I had any Orkney ancestors.
Right.
So we went there probably about 20 years ago, and we looked around all the archaeology things, and it was fantastic. And our kids were really little, and we had a brilliant time. We went up in the new year, and it was just snowing and snowing. And we drove with the kids in the car and the dogs. It was just like, we felt like we were Mary and Joseph on this massive journey. And it was snowing so much, we were like, do we turn back? And then we went on. So then scrolling on doing my family history, and then I kind of bumped into our Orkney ancestors, and I had no idea that we had any. So back this summer, my mum and my brother went back to Orkney, and I gave them a project. I had all the maps. I tracked down the little houses where they lived. And I tracked down where the pubs and the schools were, and I literally sent them on a tour, and they found one of the houses that our fisherman, I don't know how many greats it is, like four or five times great grandpa, had lived in, and it had no roof on it anymore. And it had just been bought, I think, by a Polish couple, and they were about to knock it down. So they quickly took photos.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, really dramatic. I do need to go back. So I haven't been back since.
Well, that'd be cool. It'd be a different adventure. I mean, it sounds really nice anyway, your first journey. But... That's nice.
Yeah, it is a good excuse to go and see things. Yeah. So I would love to go back, yeah. I just couldn't go back this summer. I had to do other stuff. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So what are we going to do? What are we going to do for next week then? So I think you're on Project Trunk, really, aren't you?
Trunk and a little bit of nosying into what area of Scotland, I guess. So that's obviously got my attention. So I'll have a sift through the documents and see what's available. I guess the two will come hand in hand, won't they? Because for me to find that information out, I'll either have to ask my mum. I'm not sure she will know, or whether we've got a document that does reveal that information.
Yeah.
The first bit of proper research, really, I guess.
It will, I think. So you're going through the trunk, focusing on that great granny and your Scottish line, just trying to not overwhelm yourself so you can quickly bypass things which aren't relevant to her and see what you've got. Yeah.
Just a bit of fun, because there's so many names already. And like, there's only a couple of wards. Well, obviously, it goes in directions, doesn't it? But there's so every married in name, there's so many different surnames. And send with it's quite shocking. Yeah, I'll focus on the Scottish bit for now because clearly I'm in that mood. So
yes, yeah, yeah, fun. Okay, I'll see you next week. And I've got one more question. So, are you less grumpy now? You talked about family history.
I am. I really was. Thank you. From the tree has saved my grumpiness and brought me back to life. So that's cool.
Excellent. Okay, I knew it would do.
Okay, Helen, it's question time. We've got a question from Stephanie, who has a question about war records. She put, hi, Helen. I wonder if you could help me with something. I'm guessing Harry might be a husband. I don't know. Harry would like to find his dad's war records. He doesn't know anything. He has medals, but isn't sure what they are for. Where does it begin?
Yeah, that's exciting. So that's very cool that he has his dad's medals. Is his dad, Harry's dad's medals. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Okay. So medals are pretty cool because when you first look at them, you go, oh, I don't know what they are. But medals actually say what they are on them. So when you look at, let's say Harry's roughly my age, because let's say he was, and then we're thinking of a dad maybe who fought in the Second World War, or maybe a dad who was after the Second World War getting medals for, there was lots of peacekeeping going on all around the world. So it could be by the British Army or whatever. So that's what it's called, peacekeeping. It was like, well, anyway, we'll get into colonial stuff. But anyway, getting off topic. So if it's a war medal, it will say on it. So let's say it might say like 1939 to 1945, and it's a star shape. So it's the 1939 to 45 star, because it's told you what it is. Like, so they're much easier to understand than you think. They're all also, if you have a rough idea when your ancestor served, then you can Google, like, Second World War medals. Google them up, make sure they're British Army if you're researching British ancestor. And the each medal will have its own specific ribbon with very specific colours. And I just love this. Like, the medal ribbons aren't just random colour stripes. They've all got stories behind them. So the Defence Medal for the Second World War. And you'll visualise it if I tell you this medal. The ribbon has green. It's quite a bright pea green. And it has orange stripes on it and some black stripes. And that is to remember the home front fight, so the Blitz, when Britain was getting attacked. And so you've got the green fields of England, and then the orange stripes are representing the searchlights, and the black stripes are representing the blackout, because there had to be such a fierce blackout to make sure that that the enemy couldn't see where people were living or working and everything else. So they've all got these poetic stories to these ribbons. Getting
like
Harry, anyway. So Harry, I suggest that he Googles, maybe if it is Second World War British medals. Actually, on the Family Tree website, there is actually a cool section where we have got the medal ribbons defined, I'm pretty sure. So I'll dig that out. And if it's post Second World War, he can, if he knows the era, he can keep Googling this, checking out what colour the ribbons are, what does it actually say on the rib, on the medal, and is it a star shape or a circle shape? And straight away he'll be starting to know what that medal's called. Once you know what the medal's called, then you can work out what the Google what the eligibility for that medal is. So if you're going to get an Italy star, how long would you have had to serve, and where would you have to serve to get an Italy star, that sort of thing. So because there's lots of different medals depending on which areas of the world you served in through the Second World War. I doubt that somebody who's emailing now might have a First World War ancestor. If you have a First World War ancestor, there were fewer campaign medals, but it's the same idea. Look for the what it actually says on the medal, look at the ribbon, and that will help tell you. This is quite vague, not very helpful, is it?
No, it's good. I mean, what do you do once you found out what the medal is and where it was? How do you relate that to the person?
Okay, that's a really good question. So with the First World War, if you look around the rim of the medals, like on the along the skinny side of it, for soldiers, you will see their name and rank and number engraved on the side, which is very... For the Second World War, my understanding is that wasn't necessarily the case, but you could have them inscribed yourself. And for the First World War, if you're an officer, you could have them inscribed yourself. So partly you might be looking for further clues actually there and then on the medal or on the reverse of the stars, if it's a star star they've got. Then using those clues, so the name, rank and number, you can go in and you can look up medal index cards. So for the First World War, the medal index cards have been available online on Ancestry for a while. I don't know, maybe even like 10 years or more. But the Second World War is so timely because they've only become available on Ancestry, I think today. That's freaky. Yeah, like we're speaking here now in November. Yeah, so it's very, very new and exciting information to be able to have the Second World War medal index cards. The difference of the Second World War, so with the First World War, they got, as I say, dished out with the rations, and you'd get, they were called Pip, Squeak and Wilfred, and they were three medals that most soldiers who served overseas would be eligible for, or service personnel who served overseas would be eligible for. For the Second World War, you had to actually claim your medals. So I think it's only about, 1.6 million people claimed their medals, which sounds a lot, but there were many, many more millions of people who served across all the armed forces. So only a small proportion. I don't actually know how many people British Army served in the Second World War, but I would guess it's probably 5, 6, 7 million sort of level. Because just 1 million alone served in the RAF. And then the Army has a much bigger personnel, and you've got the Navy. Yeah.
Okay. Lots of people.
Yeah, lots of people. So these Second World War records, Second World War medal records, which have just come on Ancestry, they are worth looking up. And obviously, when you're dealing with many millions of people, there are often many people with the same name. There'll be lots of Nathan Wards, yeah? So you have their rank and you have their service number, and then it will help you make sure you've got the right one. And then there are also service records, so you can order them. And again, these are becoming more available online, where you can order them from the MOD. Or for the First World War, they're already available on Ancestry. Apart from, can you believe this? In the First World War, they got in all the soldiers' service records and they put them for safekeeping in a place in London, in, I think it's called Arnhem Street. And then during one of the blitzes, a bomb didn't land there, but there was a fire which happened, and that destroyed about two-thirds of the records. The First World War soldiers' records got accidentally destroyed in the Second World War. So your odds are off of actually finding the service records, but you can if you're lucky.
Right, oh, that's a shame, isn't it?
It is a real shame. So there is stuff he can do. So first of all, it's look, I would say, actually look at the medals in front of him, yeah? And then start looking online to find information about medals and also information about service records. And so we talk about the medals which get dished out with the record rations, which is really unfair. Those are the campaign medals. So people had to go and live and work and fight for years often. And to be honest, it's lucky if they were living and fighting and working for years rather than going out and getting killed within a week or whatever. So, but it's still a huge chunk of their life, all of that work and trauma. And they so it's very kind of, it's, I guess, typical British self-deprecating humour to go, oh, dished out with the rations. But they were ones, if you were there, you just as long as you were there and did your bit, then you would get the medals. But there were also other medals which you got more kudos for. So these would be gallantry awards. So they might be like military medal or military cross or Victoria Cross, that sort of thing. So if you're extra brave, you could get this sort of stuff. So depending on what Harry has, he might, you never know, he might have some of those in there. And the same idea, look at the ribbon, look what it says on the medal or star, whatever.
That's quite an exciting search. It makes me want to find some medals of my relatives. I don't even know if I've got any, but yeah, that sounds quite cool. Obviously, not belittling what they've done, but...
Yeah, it is really cool. It's very exciting. And so let's say when you look through the trunk, if you find any, like a photo of anybody in uniform, or you find any military records, then even if you haven't got the medals, you'll still be able to learn about what they did, and you'll be able to find out what medals they would have been eligible for. So you'll be able to Google up the medals and go, hey, they would have had one of these and one of those and one of the others. Yeah?
Right, cool. I look forward to that stage. Should I find... I do think I have a story about somebody who was killed in a tank, but I don't... Yeah. Again, it's a vague childhood memory that I've heard them talking about. But...
That's going to have to be on your wish list once you've got past the Scottish great-granny and kind of gathered a little... database on her. Next could be Tank Man.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So much to explore.
I hope that helps Harry a bit anyway.
I think it definitely will. It's an exciting idea as well, and like the whole clue gathering aspect of it, and like actually using the medal itself as a clue, is that's cool.
Oh, it's definitely a clue. Yeah, it's a treasure and a clue. Yeah. Thanks, Nathan.
No problem. Till next time.
Till next time. Bye-bye.